Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, Global Supply Chain Practice Head for Morgan Phillips Executive Search. Today, I'm excited to have with us Radha Gaurav, CEO of Llamasoft. Llamasoft is a supply chain design software which helps organizations worldwide across a wide range of industries around modeling, optimizing, simulating their supply chain networks, leading to major improvements in cost, service, sustainability, and risk mitigation. Around 50% of the Fortune 100 companies have designed their supply chain using Llamasoft. A few words also on Radha. He has more than two decades of supply chain planning and execution experience. He has played a critical role in the digital transformations of some of the world's biggest brands, and his work has influenced a flow of billions of dollars worth of goods. With proven leadership in scaling and growing enterprise software businesses on a global basis, he was most recently the Executive Vice President of JDA Software, as well as General Manager and Chief Revenue Officer, as well as he held leadership roles at i2 Technologies and Ernst & Young. He is a trusted expert on supply chain trends. He has been quoted in the New York Times, Forbes, and The Hill, among other top media. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in engineering from the Illinois Institute of Technology. Radha, welcome, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thanks, Radu. Thanks for having me.
Great. So let's jump firstly, for the few of our listeners that maybe are not yet familiar with Llamasoft, what would be a simple and yet practical way to explain what it is?
Yeah, you know, Llamasoft, we're a supply chain design and decisioning platform. And customers use our solution to make decisions across their entire supply chain, all the way from sourcing into manufacturing, distribution, logistics, transportation, and fulfillment. We've been working with roughly just under 700 customers globally, and just in about every industry that has a physical supply chain. We're a classic SaaS subscription-based cloud platform, and in doing so, we of course service our customers directly as well as with the whole ecosystem of partners.
Super. And I wanted to quote, actually, because I think you have a few very interesting case studies and practical sharing on your website. So one of them was Schneider Electric, where I think you went in and managed to achieve roughly $8 million of savings through applying your solution. So maybe if you can share one or two of these case studies with us and with our audience, and then kind of also share a little bit of the main takeaways and the main points where a supply chain practitioner could basically apply in their own supply chain.
Yeah, the good thing is the problems we solve in supply chain, they're very quantifiable. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're directly relating to operating costs or working capital or service levels, right? So, you know, we're not typically working on projects that are very esoteric or just very qualitative in nature. Of course, another important element is the impact that many of our customers are focused on as it relates to sustainability. So carbon emissions and carbon footprint are also important. We've had the good fortune of working with several companies all around the world. And so if you look at our product base, the same product, the same data model we use for IKEA to make inbound sourcing decision is the same data model we use for companies like ON Semiconductor, which is in the semiconductor space, to help make production planning decisions, is the same product we help Caterpillar or Starbucks to use to make inventory, finished goods inventory decisions across their own network, in Caterpillar's case, even their dealer network, is the same product that a retailer like Meijer uses for routing their daily, you know, outbound fleet from their distribution centers, their stores, and is the same product that gets used for companies all around the world in helping analyze their sourcing strategies, their routing decisions, taking into account tariffs and the changing complexity of global tariffs and trade regulations and policies in general. So all of these capabilities, of course, impact decisions that companies make both in the short term as well as in the long strategic term. And these decisions typically result in massive reductions in working capital, typically through inventory cost reductions, as well as in operating costs through various elements of the supply chain, all fixed variable costs. So we have a whole number of interesting case studies. The one you're referring to is from Schneider. We also have some interesting case studies listed on our website that I'd welcome your listeners to go and watch. But the work we do is fascinating because it directly impacts the bottom line of our customers, and at the same time impacts a lot of the sustainability metrics and the risk metrics that our customers are looking at as well. One of the interesting things, for example, on the risk side has been more recently around the impact of tariffs, right? So we have several customers in Mexico, in the US, in Europe, in China, who are constantly, playing out various scenarios of what different, policies that their governments are imposing on them would mean and would imply as it relates to their distribution of their finished products or the sourcing of their raw materials or component parts. And at times, these tariff regulations can result in anywhere from 10 to 40% increase in their total cost of goods sold. So they're having to make significant changes in the design of their network and making their sourcing decisions, making their distribution network decisions, making their routing decisions on how to flow the products becomes very, very different in a changing landscape as far as the tariff regimes are concerned. So risk is a very important element. Obviously, most companies deal with risk, supply chain risk, by adding buffer inventory. That's been the classic situation. And overall, that's not a very good thing for the economies around the world. It's definitely not very good for a company's balance sheet. So we do everything possible to provide a platform where they can use their data, they can use market data to create the digital twin of their supply chain. And then through that digital twin, they're able to play out various scenarios to help make both strategic, tactical, and operational decisions.
Yes. And I wanted to ask you, because I remember one of the case studies was actually from an avocado producer. So if we were to take, I don't know if you remember, there was a basically, because that's a fresh product. So in a sense, the supply chains, typically of fresh products are even more, well, sometimes are even more harder to mitigate and to basically manage. I don't know if you remember that particular case study, but I was wondering if we were to take that as an example, and to think, how did LLamasoft play, if even from the implementation, because I mean, I assume that you need a certain level of organizational readiness for you to be able to extract that data. So from the implementation side to the point where you saved and you were able to show the bottom line returns for the client, how did you do it?
Yeah, I don't recall specifically the avocado case study that you're talking about, but we've studied the avocado supply chain very closely. Ironically, it looks very similar to the supply chain of bananas, where they are perishable. But what's interesting is that when you get the original product from the fields, they're not yet ready for consumption. Yes. And they get ready while they're in transit from the field to the retail shelf, okay, or to somebody's home. And so the timing of your supply chain and the cycle times involved are very critical in how they move through your supply chain, because you're essentially aging the product and getting it ready for consumption. And if it stays for too long, obviously it becomes waste. But if it arrives too early, then again, it's not really something that a consumer would go and buy in a grocery shelf because it's not ready for consumption. So it's a very interesting supply chain. What's unique about the avocado supply chain specifically is that the sources of supply are very limited. In fact, over 80-85% of the world's avocados, they come from Mexico. And And so it's even more constrained supply or more concentrated supply as a source of supply compared to bananas. So that's something that's very interesting. Now, in a situation like that, we typically help the customers do several things. The first would be, how do they plan their product flow across their supply chain? So in the case of avocados, what would be the optimal path to flow the product, taking into account all the fixed and variable costs, but also in this case, taking into account the importance of cycle times, because like I said, you're aging the product and getting it ready for consumption as it flows. So the timing and the speed and velocity and the days of supply become very, very critical. We also would help typically customers with allocating inventory across their distribution and their retail network. So if we're working with a wholesaler or a distributor, sometimes they are supplying to retailers. Sometimes they're also supplying to other food manufacturers that use avocados as an ingredient, right? So there, how do they allocate inventory in an optimal way, taking into account certain demand patterns in an effort to maximize service level and in an effort to maximize the overall revenue and margin profiles? So the inventory side is very important, and the allocation of inventory. The third thing is, of course, we would help with any elements around the logistics and transportation routings. What lanes to use, what mode of transportation to use, what capacity needs they may have, what specialized equipment they may need. In the case of avocados, typically, unless we're moving the product through certain weather patterns that may be at the extreme, they can typically move without refrigeration. There's some other perishable products where temperature-controlled equipment is very important. So, the mode strategy, the transportation strategy, the routings become very important as well. We would help with our customers. And then finally, what is the physical location of the network as well? So which distribution centers to use, what ports, what railheads if you're moving it to rail, also what airports if you're air freighting certain things. Those are all elements that we would help with. I think if I'm thinking of the same organization that you're referring to in your case study, I think a lot of the focus was around reducing transportation and distribution costs. And there we were able to identify about $12 million annualized savings, so annual $12 million of savings in transportation and distribution costs for this particular producer of avocados.
And I wanted to ask you in this particular, this is more out of personal curiosity and also maybe for your other clients, what do you think is the main challenge before they implement LlamaSoft? So like, is it lack of visibility? Is the fact that they're quite maybe, still ancient in their spreadsheet or the way they track their flow of goods? Is it what typically seems to be the common challenges that LlamaSoft fixes in the supply chain of your clients?
Yeah, we're in the business of outsmarting uncertainty. Okay, so typical business pains that our customers face are a lot of change and variability in their supply chain and in their overall business environment. A lot of that could be caused by external changes because of the way the market is performing or certain macroeconomic trends, like, for example, currency volatility or the price of fuel. It could be because of socioeconomic or policy changes, like in the case of trade and tariffs. Could be because of ongoing changes and shifts that may be occurring on a macroeconomic basis. It could also be changes just in the competitive landscape, and so a lot of external changes are a common thread for some of the challenges that our customers face. There could also be a lot of internal challenges, right? And a lot of internal changes. You know, a lot of times our customers' business models are changing. Like, for example, in retail, right now, there's a big shift, as we all know, happening towards omnichannel, right? Many consumers, particularly in North America, Western Europe, obviously in the Greater China area, are moving their buying patterns towards mobile phone and online ordering, and they're expecting home deliveries, they're expecting click and collect operations. All of those require some very fundamental structural changes in the supply chain. There can also be internal changes that are being caused by, for example, digital initiatives or technology disruptions. For example, we have customers who may be implementing ERP strategies or data lake strategies where they're trying to unify how they're managing various processes. And of course, supply chain becomes one of those different elements. So typically, most of our customers, the pain points they face are change and variability. Variability and complexity. And a lot of that complexity could come from SKU proliferation. A lot of that complexity could come from the global outreach, whether it's from a customer perspective or whether it's from a source of supply perspective. So variability, uncertainty, complexity is typically what drives the pain points for our customers. And then we're helping them, like I mentioned earlier, to provide a sandbox and a platform that is able to replicate what's happening in that operating environment from a supply chain perspective. And our definition of supply chain is very broad. Different organizations define supply chain in different ways. Even after 30 years, we don't have a unified descriptor for what is the meaning of supply chains. But when we say supply chains at LLamasoft, we're talking about the end-to-end supply chain, all the way from sourcing into manufacturing, distribution, logistics, into customers' fulfillment network. And across that scope, we help our customers develop the digital twin, which means we have to be able to represent all the operational complexity and constraints that exist in that supply chain, right? Supply chains are inherently highly constrained and highly complex environments. So to represent those in a digital form that you can then use to play out different scenarios requires not just the ability to, reflect all those different operations from a breadth perspective, but also from a level of granularity perspective, right? How can you reflect the shop floor constraints in a production plant? How can you reflect dock doors and receiving hours, closing hours in a distribution center? How can you, reflect the lane level capacity, transportation capacity from a mode perspective, within a given OD pair, origin destination pair? How do you think of lead times? What is the variability in that lead time? What sort of inventory policies should you be carrying? What should be the min-max level of buffer inventory you should be carrying? All of those different kinds of complexities we reflect in our digital twin. And then we're using the power of mathematics, of algorithms, whether they are optimization algorithms, simulation algorithms, or artificial intelligence machine learning algorithms to help our customers with decisioning. And those decisions can be any number of decisions that our customers have to make on an ongoing basis, or for making large capital investments, or for making ongoing tactical decisions and looking at trade-offs, right? Today, what's happened is most companies have structured supply chains following the SCORE model, right? And the SCORE model calls for buy, make, move, sell kind of a framework. And that framework has worked very well for 30-something years. And it has brought with it a lot of process definition and a lot of operational excellence. However, with that has also come, you know, a siloed mindset of decision making. And we see that as a big challenge for many companies, especially a lot of the larger Google companies. And part of what we are hoping to disrupt and to really create value with is to provide a common framework for decisioning across those silos. So you can look at trade-offs from a manufacturing, inventory, and transportation perspective. So for any supply chain professional, just something as simple as that, in looking at the trade-off of manufacturing costs, transportation costs, inventory costs on an ongoing basis for today's decision or next month's decision or next year's decision is not very simple to do. Because, you know, traditionally these functions have been managed very separate from each other. But for the enterprise, it's important to look at those trade-offs so you make the best decision for the organization as opposed to for that, just for that silo. So that's what we're trying to do, is to really enable this cohesive decisioning platform that is taking into account the end-to-end supply chain and all the different elements of that supply chain and the trade-offs that are inherent in that supply chain.
Got it. And it's a very good example. I mean, and I think a lot of companies and a lot of senior management are missing the data, and they don't have that visibility of data to make the decisions. So I think that's where you come into play. But I guess a question that I need to ask, right? Because I think there's a couple of, and you have a couple of competitors, and there's a couple of solutions out there on the market. So if I'm to throw you the question, what would you say is the main differentiator to Lamasoft? So in terms of a solution where you stand out in terms of, are there certain industries in particular, or is it in general where you stand out compared to the rest of the players out there?
Look, I've been in the supply chain software space for 20 plus years, as you mentioned earlier. I've built systems over the years. And again, when we developed supply chain software, starting 25 years ago, you know, we also took the SCORE model and we architected products, supply chain systems products that map to the SCORE model. So today we have a TMS, we have a WMS, we have an S&OP solution, we have an inventory optimization solution. So the industry has developed these applications that map the SCORE model. And while those applications are important and they play an important role, and I've been partly accountable for delivering a lot of those systems over the years.
Yes.
those systems, again, they reinforce the silos that exist in an organization. And now with data and with the power of computing and with the power of algorithms, for the first time, we have the opportunity that we are trying to enable with Lamasoft to work across those silos. I think that's the biggest differentiation between the Lamasoft solution for supply chain versus anything else that's available in the market, is we're trying to not go in and rip and replace. We're not trying to create the next best TMS or the next best demand planning solution or the next best, you know, S&OP solution. We're trying to make all of those solutions smarter. Okay, and we're trying to make those solutions smarter by bringing this digital decisioning layer that sits across those systems, takes the data from those systems, takes data from other external sources, and is able to look at those trade-offs in a holistic way. Okay, that's the biggest differentiator. And the reason why we're able to do that is because of the data model we have, which, like I mentioned earlier, in terms of the breadth of how it represents the supply chain and in terms of the level of granularity and the depth with which in how it reflects the supply chain, is highly differentiated. And then, of course, we have probably one of the richest algorithm libraries that customers can use to make all kinds of decisions. And all of that is done in one single data model. Right. So we don't have multiple data models. We don't have multiple technology stacks. All of that is done in one place. And that's the biggest differentiator. And then in addition to that, we're embarking on a new path now where we're bringing to market a new platform that's able to operationalize these decisions in a very rapid way. one of the issues that exists today, beyond just the siloed functions coming from the SCORE model and the siloed decisioning that comes from, you know, traditional supply chain planning and execution systems, is that you also have today, most companies we work with have a systems infrastructure and a systems landscape where they may be using 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 different applications to manage their end-to-end supply chain, right? No one has a wall-to-wall single product footprint to manage their supply chain. That does not exist today. And for them to, and a lot of these systems may have been implemented 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And they have set in like concrete, right? When they were implemented, they got implemented with certain assumptions, with certain inputs, with certain parameters. And in that time frame, the businesses that these companies have may have changed dramatically. For them to go in and change those systems requires sometimes 18-month, 24-month, 36-month projects. In that time frame, their businesses change even further, right? And so the systems architecture in how companies are managing supply chains just cannot keep pace with the pace of change that business is experiencing. And so that's a pain point I've experienced and lived through for many years, and I've seen our customers over the years live through. So one of the things we've done is we've architected a platform that allows customers to, of course, create the digital twin, use algorithms to make decisions very rapidly, leveraging the power of mathematics. But then also we have designed this app studio or app publishing studio, so they can create very rapidly in weeks apps that address specific use cases and are able to operationalize those decisions in a very rapid time frame and can deploy and integrate into those, into that patchwork of systems that exist today, so without having to rip and replace those systems, right? So that's why when I say, you know, we're in the business, we're not in the business of trying to create the next best TMS or demand planning or supply planning solution, but to make all of those systems smarter is through this app-based infrastructure. And that's a very disruptive and innovative approach to the market, which I don't see other players in supply chain planning and execution taking. Most supply chain planning and execution systems today, they come with an out of the box system, and the assumption is you implement that system and you get the best practice that comes with the system. However, with the pace of change in businesses, what is best practice today may not be best practice tomorrow. In fact, what may have been best practice 5 years ago when you implemented those systems will most likely not be best practice today or tomorrow, right? So, but not in, most organizations don't have the appetite, you know, because it could be a 25, 30 year project to rip and replace all those existing legacy systems. So our approach to this app studio that is able to rapidly operationalize decisions within that existing landscape, we think is highly, highly differentiated and can create much more time to value compared to a traditional approach that will typically take you 12, 18, 24 months.
Yes. And I mean, so it's basically like you're trying to create the platform. You're kind of like, if I'm to use, maybe it's a far-fetched metaphor, but the kind of like an Android where you can have different apps for supply chain. And basically those apps, they can be upgraded as per the new business requirements, but without having to go through the change processes that are necessary. If basically you have to start from scratch, right? And reinstall from scratch, kind of.
Maybe something like that,
right? If I'm to kind of dumb it down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you can innovate on process, workflow, and decision-making as opposed to just take a packaged application out of the box and everyone implements the same process, right? So there's value in that. Don't get me wrong. There's still some value in that. But if an organization has already implemented the first and second generation of an S&OP solution, for example, or a supply planning solution or a demand planning solution, how do they get the next wave of value, right? So if I implement a demand planning software, for example, has been around for 30 plus years, right? I may have implemented a demand planning system from SAP or JDA or Oracle or some other company like that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, right? Now, I've plateaued in terms of my forecast accuracy. In my experience, in most companies, forecast accuracy actually dilutes, goes down, declines over time because there's a big divergence between the direction of the business and how it's changing versus when the software was implemented, right? Now, the companies have a choice. You know, they can go in and try to re-implement the software and redo a lot of things, or they can go and replace that software with something else. Those are both going to be very long, expensive, you know.
Painful change management. Yes.
Huge change management, right? So one of the things, for example, in the demand planning area, demand modeling areas, we've created a new demand modeling tool that takes data from these systems, takes data from other systems in your enterprise, and leverages machine learning to self-realize and self-identify what attributes should you be, you know, forecasting on. It's something that the human eye just cannot do very well because you come up with all kinds of counterintuitive correlations. And then it leverages not just the enterprise data, but also leverages external causals. Sometimes, you know, something as simple as taking into account, you know, inflation rates in specific countries or GDP rates can have a huge correlation to your product, you know, demand profiles. So taking into account these external causals together with the machine learning based attributes, we're finding that we are able to improve forecast accuracy sometimes by gargantuan numbers. Gargantuan numbers because sometimes I myself have to push back on our team because I don't believe that the results can be that great, but these are resulting in like 20, 25, 30% improvement in forecast accuracy from what legacy systems are doing. And it's not because it's magic, it's because we're using more relevant information. We're using, you know, more relevant parameters. For example, you know, when you may have implemented the demand planning system, you may not have taken into account promotions. Well, you may be doing a lot more promotions now. For you to make that change in your current demand planning system could be an 18-month project.
Yes, we can do that. Yours is upgraded, almost automatically. Got it.
Right.
Got it.
You may have introduced certain product lines that may be cannibalizing your other products, or there may be a halo effect from other products, or you may be not taking into account certain external causes, like I mentioned earlier. So we're not in the business of coming up with the next best demand planning system. We're in the business of making all demand planning systems smarter. That's the approach we're taking.
Good summary. And moving on to the people side of the business, because at the end of the day, every business boils down to people. It boils down to the talent that you have inside the organization. And I think there was a quote in one of the interviews that you gave in which you said that you've got to have really smart people who can innovate and think out of the box to solve the problems of tomorrow. And I think LlamaSoft has nearly doubled the headcount in the last 3 years. So you now reached almost 500 worldwide. How do you make sure that the recruitment process is on point, that you're recruiting the right people? What are the things that you're looking for when you're hiring, basically?
Yeah. You know, at LlamaSoft, it's interesting because we've been growing very rapidly. We've been growing at over 30% year over year for the last several years, which is nice. But, you know, we're in the people business. So we don't own buildings. We don't, you know, manufacture products. We don't own inventory. Our biggest asset is our people, right? And all the software we make really is worth nothing without the people that go behind it. So we've really revved up our recruiting engine, our training and enablement engine. For example, in the last 12 months, we've brought on board more than 100 people worldwide. Today, we're already at about 515 people. We'll end the year well north of that. So we're growing very rapidly. But it's not sufficient for us to grow ourselves. You know, one of the biggest risks I see to our ability to sustain the kind of growth rates we've experienced is by not having sufficient number of trained and skilled people with our partners and with our customers. So we're taking a much more concerted effort in doubling down and investing in training and enablement initiatives. And you'll see us doing a lot more of that, probably with 2 to 3 times as much intensity as what we've done in the past. And we're going back to the grassroots and the fundamentals of working more closely with a few universities, in partnership with a few universities, so we could start influencing the curriculum that some of these students are going through in their industrial engineering or their supply chain, master's in supply chain management programs, or their operations research programs, so that we, by the time they graduate, they've already leveraged our product in some classroom curriculum through internships. And then by the time they graduate, we make that pool of resources available, not just to ourselves, but also to our partners and to our customers. So this is something that is a much deeper approach to going upstream in our university channels and partnering with a few of them, so we can, you know, more than triple the number of users who are skilled and proficient with our product across our ecosystem. That, I think, is a very important critical success factor. You know, we put together a 5-year plan. I came on board, as you know, about 6 months ago, went through my listening tour, and then we've been putting together a 5-year plan. We just completed that a few weeks ago. And we're transitioning into execution now. But as part of the 5-year plan, we set some specific strategic goals and a product strategy and a go-to-market strategy to map to that. But one of those strategic goals is to significantly increase the ecosystem of trained LLamasoft users across our ecosystem.
Yes. No, and that's exactly, I think just before the podcast I was sharing with you, and it was one of my team was recruiting for two of our clients. One was a logistics company and one was a manufacturing company, and they were looking for LLamasoft experts. And I know the pain that my team has gone through in terms of finding those people and in terms of getting them on board. So I think you're spot on. If you manage to increase your ecosystem of basically flag bearers at the end of the day, right? These people that have used the tool, that know the power of the tool, not necessarily working for LLamasoft, but kind of your advertisers within companies, I think that will help a lot, because at the end of the day, you need people within this supply chain organizations to use LLamasoft, and sometimes people just use what is comfortable. You know, the more you spread yourself, the better, and the more people will know, and then the more people will ultimately buy and use your solution. But bringing it back to specifically people within the LLamasoft team, and maybe talking about your leadership team, because also it's an interesting part, right? Because you've joined them about 6 months ago, so that has been an interesting journey, and I'm sure you've had a journey full of lessons in the last couple of months. But what are you looking for in general, and maybe also when you bring in, if you need to bring in new blood in your team, what are some of the attributes that you would say make a good leader within an organization?
Yeah, you know, of course, there are some general attributes, and then, of course, then there are more specialized needs based on which function within the organization, right? Because we have product engineering, product management, marketing, sales, biz dev, professional services, support, customer success. There are various functions in the group. But in general, you know, I like to look for people who thrive in a dynamic and changing environment. We're in the technology space. As you can imagine, there'll continue to be a lot of innovation and a lot of disruption in the technology space. So, you know, I'm typically looking for leaders who thrive in that sort of an environment. That's point number one. Point number two is, you know, leaders who are the best learners possible. And what I mean by that is learning, constant learning is very important in what we do, because you know, whether it's learning about our customers' businesses, whether it's learning about new technologies, you know, learning about new capabilities that we may be introducing into the market, learning, and you know, it's a general framework that you know, we think is very important. And then thirdly, just cultural fit. You know, at LLamasoft, we have, you know, one of the special things about LLamasoft is our unique culture, and that culture is very focused on innovation. It's very focused on people. It's focused on generating value for our customers, but also impacting lives. Another one of our five-year goals, for example, is to positively impact 100 million lives over the next 5 years through a lot of the global impact work we do with public health systems, with sustainability initiatives, and especially in underdeveloped countries. So that cultural fit is important. Is, you know, we're people who are passionate about supply chains. We're passionate about technology, but we're also passionate about a cause that's bigger than just our P&L and our balance sheet. And so that cultural fit is very important. Those are the three things I look for: is are people who thrive in a changing environment, people who are constantly learning, and people who would be you know, a good cultural fit and who believe in the same sort of mission that we stand for as a company.
Mm. And in terms of I would be curious, because you've been growing so fast, and I mean, especially in the last couple of years, it's been tremendous. I mean, 30% growth is a lot. So in terms of your plans to expand, where will you expand next? What's some of the you know, next kind of milestones that you're aiming at in the next 6, 12, 18 months maybe?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that, because we recently did a pretty detailed market study to understand, you know, what's our addressable market, because the good thing is that we have a very broad addressable market with just about any company that has a supply chain. And at the same time, we have to prioritize our go-to-market efforts appropriately, right? So we did a pretty detailed study and looked at certain criteria and thresholds, and we identified that there are roughly about 11,000 companies we can be working with. Of those 11,000 companies, we have just been able to get a foot in the door with about 700 of them, okay? So we have a huge universe of companies we can be working with. And oh, by the way, the 700 companies that we've already got a foot in the door that we have a relationship with today, we can be working, you know, in 3, 4, 5 times as many use cases in other areas of their supply chain than where we are working today. So we have significant room for expansion within the existing customer base. And that's why we're taking a much more of a focused effort around account management and in customer success in general, as well as we can be getting into net new accounts. So there's plenty of opportunity. In terms of geographic expansion, of course, North America is roughly about 60% of our business. But we've made some significant investments this year in parts of Western Europe, specifically the DACH region, which is the German-speaking countries. We have significant investments there, UK, and then Southwest Europe. We also in Asia have a significant traction growth in the Greater China area, as well as in Japan. I'm sitting in Japan as I'm talking to you right now. And then in Latin America, we have significant growth in Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia. Those are the top markets we have from a geographic perspective. Industry-wise, we work across manufacturing and retail. So, you know, in manufacturing, we work with just about every subsegment of manufacturing, all the way from high-tech, semiconductor, consumer electronics, industrial manufacturing, automotive, you know, CPG, food, beverage, pharmaceuticals, healthcare, med devices, you just name it, because all these manufacturers have significant supply chains. And then on the retail side, we work with just about every subsegment of retail as well. So grocery, fashion, apparel, DIY, general merchandise, specialty retail, consumer electronics retail, etc. And then we also work with a few third-party logistics partners, and then we work with a whole network of consulting partners as well. So that's sort of a horizontal play, but we're taking a much more pronounced view of the geographic markets where we're expanding. And right now, a lot of our growth is in beyond just North America, is coming from some specific markets in Western Europe, China, Japan, and then Mexico and Brazil.
Obviously, I'm sitting in Singapore as we speak, and if you need some good salespeople in Singapore, let me know. because also Southeast Asia is growing quite a lot, and I think for the future it's a very good market. But at the same time, of course, you need to pace yourself in terms of markets where you focus. And I mean, there's plenty full of things happening in China. I think probably from a dynamism perspective, even now with all the talk and the hype with the tariffs and everything, China is still the number one growth engine. But I think it's slowly shifting towards Southeast Asia, and especially once these tariffs will hit more and more, I think some of the manufacturing will be rerouted. So that will be interesting to see as well in the next couple of years. And I just wanted to kind of transition to the last question, and I was kind of wondering what to ask you as the last question, but I'll ask you this. You know, you've had a long career, you've been for a long time in the supply chain software business. If you were to think, you know, where you see the industry moving in the next 5 to 10 years. And I know that it's very hard to make predictions, and I know that is very tricky, actually. But what are some of the elements, or what are some of the trends that you see happening and coming to us?
Yeah, you know, data, when combined with cloud computing and the latest generation of algorithms, is, I think, going to fundamentally change the way we manage supply chains around the world. We have more data than we've ever had in the history of the world. A lot of people like to think of data as the new oil, right? And I think it's definitely going to be the new oil for supply chains. The question is going to be, how do you monetize that data? And when I say how do you monetize the data, meaning how do you make better decisions using this data that is available? And I think in monetizing that data, that's where the latest generation of algorithms and the latest generation of cloud computing is going to have a huge impact. I think there's a lot of hype right now around machine learning and AI. And you know, there's always, you know, what's the reality, what's the hype. I personally believe that there are very good use cases, and there are very good examples where machine learning can provide automation and can bring a next generation of capability to many organizations in the supply chain area. And we're definitely investing in that space. However, it's not going to be the only type of mathematical formulation that's going to provide decision support in supply chains. I think there's still going to be a role for, constraint-based optimization. There's still going to be a role for simulation and stochastic modeling. There's still going to be a role for statistical analysis. There's still going to be a role for elements around machine learning as well. So it just depends on what questions you're asking and what answers are you seeking, meaning what decisions are you trying to make at the end of the day. But you know, we are able to today solve problems in seconds that previously took us, you know, sometimes more than a day, more than 24 hours of runtime. That's the sort of dramatic decrease we're seeing in our ability to use sophisticated modeling to make decisions. And we have more and more data available in real time than we've ever had in the past. So I think that's where, supply chains are going to morph. I also, that's the first trend, and that's, I know that's a very technology-centric view of the supply chain. But the second trend I think that's going to also shape up is that through this innovation in data and technology and the digital journey of organizations, I think the lines will start blurring on many fronts between where does the supply chain start and end. And when I say that, what I mean is, you know, the front end of the supply chain, which is its interface with sales and marketing functions, will start blurring. You know, I've always been a believer that supply chains start with the demand. The ultimate source of demand is the consumer, or at least your customer. And so I think there'll be a lot of overlapping and needs for closer integration and alignment, and in some ways, cross-functional skill sets that converge elements of sales and marketing and supply chain analytics into one cohesive approach. So I think organizationally, that also has implications in how companies are structuring their supply chain organizations. And also in terms of the skills, clearly, you know, with the rising adoption of technologies and the increasing propensity for companies to bring automation and to bring automated decision-making into their organization, I think the needs for the supply chain skills will change as well. And that's where we're going to have to, you know, we're still going to need people in the supply chain, but probably need them more to manage relationships, manage the exceptions, look at the trade-offs, and really still be able to bring that level of judgment into how they manage day-to-day operations and how they make strategic and tactical decisions. So I think with a combination of the technology changes, with the changes in that will impact the changes in the organization and the functional morphing, especially with sales and marketing, and then ultimately all that will imply that you need new skills that are required in the supply chain than what you may have had traditionally.
Yes. And I mean, back to your point, I think you mentioned that you need to have that attitude of lifelong learning and continuous and constant learning. So I think that's something that is a given, and the softer skills will become more and more important the more we get access to this data, algorithms and machine learning and other things that can be automated. Is going to come down to, funnily enough, the human factor that will matter more and more. In a morphed way, in a different way than it matters today, maybe, or in a more advanced way than it matters today, but still it's going to become even more crucial. So
I think ultimately you need more and more people in the supply chain who can enable the algorithmic part of the supply chain. And you also need more and more people who can bring the human element of the supply chain to bear. I mean, you go and look at the supply chain organization and the skill sets of Amazon, you know, or Alibaba. They're very different. They look very different from the organization and a lot of the traditional retailers or CPG companies, right? It's a little bit of a forward indicator of the kinds of skills you're going to need in the future.
Yes. I mean, it's already happening. It's just a matter of, you know, how fast are the retailers and the CPG companies going to adapt. And if they're not going to adapt, well, you know, tough luck. I mean, I've seen a few bankruptcies, so I think it's just going to continue. So, you know, the market is the market. So you either adapt or you get punched, but there's no middle ground typically. But yeah, on that note, Razat, thank you very much for the sharing. Appreciate the insights, appreciate the case studies and the learnings shared. And thank you for your time and for being with us today. We wish you also very, very good luck in continuing to maintain the growth and keep developing LlamaSoft worldwide.
Great, Rado. Good talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radopalamariu.com/podcast for all the show notes, links, and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.